Hello and welcome to Dynasty As They Wanna Be, a podcast where we drill into every episode of the iconic 1980s television series, Dynasty. I'm your host, Derek J. Lang, and with me is my co-host, Kyler K. Jafari.
Bonsoir.
Good evening. You've made a great concoction for us, a classic to imbibe on while we discuss this week's episode.
Yeah, I guess now is the time because, as we see later, Claudia is at Scandals ordering a martini.
Yeah.
You know, this drink doesn't get a lot of love in the 80s and 90s. It almost disappeared, and all the cocktails really were pretty bad at this time. It was wine coolers, white wine spritzer, maybe some Bud Light. Somehow the martini made it all the way through, and it's still here with us today. And I still think it's a great drink. It's one of the first drinks I ever ordered at the the bowling alley in Altamont Springs, Florida, or something like that. And I've drank everything, and I still come back to the Archduke of all cocktails. And all it is a couple ounces of gin, a dash of vermouth, and if you leave the vermouth out, you're
a monster.
A bucket of gin. Yeah. That's just an excuse to be an alcoholic. And you need that garnish, you know. I think the olive is classic, and the twist of lemon is totally cool, too. It's debatable which one came first, or maybe they both coincided and lived in a parallel universe together. But anyway, whether you like it with an olive or a lemon twist, it's the dry gin martini. And that's what we're drinking tonight.
Yeah, well, that's what I love about the martini. The history isn't totally written in stone.
No, it's not. I hate to give shout-outs. David Wunderich did a tireless scholarship on the origins and history of the martini. And even he admits that we're not quite sure of exactly what the heritage is. But we have a lot of sort of, you know, sidebars throughout history going way back to a couple hundred years ago, almost maybe 150 years ago. Anyway, but here we are still drinking it, and it's so delicious, and it gets the job done. And it's a sharp, pure, simple drink that cuts right to the chase. So,
well, chin chin.
Chin chin.
Cheers. Here's to Claudia Blaisdell. Hopefully after we drink these, we don't do everything she did in this episode.
I don't know. I wouldn't mind doing a few of those things. I mean, I would love to get in a time machine and go back to Scandals.
Scandals looked amazing. So this episode, actually, fun fact, was part two of a two-parter. So last week's episode, Crystal's Lie, and this week's episode, The Necklace, were together. So I don't remember if we mentioned it last week, but there was no "to be continued ... because as they aired. So spoiler alert, we do get a "to be continued ... at the end of this episode. But I think the episodes themselves really stand on their own. Unlike Oil, parts 1, 2,
which
3.
Which really kind of requires all in one viewing.
Yes, it's very filmic in that way. But these sort of stand alone.
It just like Sweeps Week, do you think? I mean, or why was there a special two-parter?
I don't know. So don't try to make me look bad.
You're making me look bad in front of the guests.
I don't know, but on the day that this episode aired, I do know that a plane was hijacked by some Pakistani terrorists.
Oh, I vaguely recall that from history at that time.
Yes, March 2nd, 1981.
All right.
Anyway, let's take a break and we'll get into this episode. And I'm going to take a few more sips of this martini. Welcome back. All right, Kyler, we have to start exactly where we left off.
Well, we want to move on from the darkness, but
I would love to move on from the darkness, but it seems like they just sort of gloss over the fact that spousal rape just happened on this show.
Again, this part of this, like, because also Claudia and Matthew are having an argument, obviously not to the level that Blake and Karen or Blake and Crystal have. But it's, I want to relate to what's going on right now in this episode, because, you know, when people have been together for a long time, they do go down these dark paths sometimes. And so I, on one hand, I sympathize, like, you know, Crystal's at home moping, Blake's at work worrying about his wife.
Moping is an understatement. She's catatonic, well, okay, right, because yes, she was just violently attacked by her new husband.
I mean, I'm surprised she's not drinking, smoking, and shooting up drugs, because, like, I don't know how she got through all this after what we saw in the previous episode. And, you know, Blake's at work. He's worried, but you also have to think, like, well, it's for his own selfish reasons, right? But they're, yes, in a relationship. They're married. And there is some kind of weird love between the two of them, I guess. I more on his side. I clearly Crystal is the good cop in this situation. But, you know, I think there's a level of abuse that's just not excusable by flowers. I mean,
yeah. So that's how Blake decides to apologize, is he comes home because she refuses to answer her calls, as she should, and he presents her with a box of flowers and this story that's like a non-apology.
The story went on too long, and I was just like, I don't want to hear this story, dude.
But it's also like he wasn't speaking from his heart. He's telling the story about how he got the flower shop owner to open up to get him the flowers, and he was telling the flower shop owner.
I think it's Blake's version of romance. You know, it's the same place that he bought the flowers for the baby shower, I think, or right after the baby shower in the first couple episodes, if you remember, and he bought out the whole shop for her.
Yeah, of course, but like what he did is so unforgivable. So there's not really anything that he could do, but like this is it? Flowers and a story about convincing the flower shop owner to open?
Yes, he's delivering that like piss poor story, and then he has the nerve to say to her that she has the strangest kind of power over him. And I'm just like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, you just overcame her with your own power and asserted, you know, all kinds of inappropriate. It's a violation.
Right. Well, and then that's the other weird thing, is that he kind of turns it around on her and is like, you have such power over me. You make me love you so much. That he's still victimizing her, even in this apology moment.
Oh, Crystal. You seem to have the strangest kind of power over me. Just that it's not my nature to have anyone affect me this way, to be so close to me. It's not that I wanted the child that much, it's just, I wanted a part of me to live inside you.
For a minute, I shouldn't say a minute, for a moment, she has a reaction. And again, Linda Evans, her face, her eyes say it all. And I thought they were saying something, and I thought she was not going to buy this. And then suddenly she's back in his arms and okay,
apology accepted.
Yeah. And I'm just like, is this Stockholm syndrome? I mean, because she's basically said she's not going to leave him. And it was sort of implied that she couldn't leave him because the money, the house, the pre-planned agreement, all of the, you know, consequences of making such a decision. So, okay, yeah, apology accepted. But it's all like in this like loving Crystal way. And again, Stockholm syndrome. I don't know what else this is. This is insane.
Yeah, and Blake reiterates the fact that he just really, really wants a child, because a child would be an indication of their love for each other.
And he keeps talking about putting it in her. It's like gross.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we have alcoholic beverages, because I wouldn't be able to get.
And the other thing
is,
like, he's like, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever known and loved. And why is it always like about looks? Because, like, one day she's going to get old. I mean, hopefully she's still beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, any way you slice it, the whole thing is disgusting. And look, the only way I'm going to be able to get through this podcast and moving forward is to kind of forget the whole thing happened, because...
Well, that's what Crystal's trying to do.
No, and it's not healthy, and it's not what you should do in these situations at all. Obviously, it leads to other emotional problems and other problems in your life, but I don't know. I don't know how to wrap my head around this.
I think I'm going to be like Crystal. I'm just going to accept it and just ignore it and move on. So we have Matthew and Claudia, who are also sort of not having, you know, their marriage is a little bit on the rocks. I do like the, they have this like argument before Matthew goes to work, and he's, you know, like, oh, the oil rig came in. We're in the money, honey. And she's like, I want to come along. And he's like, well, you know, I'm going to be out with the guys for like the next 2 to 3 days because of this, which I guess that's how big of a deal it is. It's like going to be a 72-hour free-for-all.
Drill, baby, yeah. Drill.
And, but, you know, so they get into sort of a serious disagreement. And she's like, you're not around. You're not expressing yourself. We're not having sex. We're not... You know, we're just not even like we're not even married anymore.
Well, all of this underlying tension is because she knows that he stepped out when she was in the mental institution with Crystal. So everything she's saying goes back to that.
But what I like is she's not going off the handle. She's actually kind of pragmatic about the whole thing. And so it's like, oh, she's not the crazy woman who got locked up in the hospital or what everybody keeps saying about her.
Claudia can't handle the stress of her home life. And as you sort of mentioned at the beginning of the episode, she decides to go out on the town.
Well, I like the parallel with Claudia going out and then Lindsay going out, and they're having their own separate evenings, but they're kind of the same. Like, I guess it's like Friday night, or I hope it's Friday night. I hope they're not doing this on a school night. And Claudia goes to a singles bar, Scandals. And Lindsay goes to like her, you know, friend's party out in the suburbs or something at Tanya's parents' house, I guess.
Now, I have a question. Yes. Is Scandals a disco? Disco is dead at this point, right?
You know, I was going to get into this for a hot second, but I'm not really sure. I would have called this a fern bar, which was like the term for these sorts of places because they were like singles bars, but it doesn't have like quite the antiques nailed to the wall and Tiffany lampshades on everything, but it's still
there
the same
was
idea.
A rope around the dance floor.
There was a rope
people
around the dance
were
floor
boogieing
so
down.
This, so I guess this was technically still more of a discotheque. Maybe we'll just call it a singles bar, and that's what she calls it. So
yeah, well, there's dancing, there's drinks, and there's lots of flirting with,
you know,
Claudia,
like,
Blaisdell at
the
bar. The
Fern Bar turned more into like what we know today as like TGI Fridays, or like what was Bennigan's, or even Chili's, you know. But it was like a place
your neighborhood
for
grill and bar.
Young, single, you know, upwardly mobile professionals to hook up over a Harvey Wallbanger.
Well, she's a hot piece. She gets up to that bar and orders a martini, and all the men are kind of looking at her. And the one she ends up striking up the conversation with is, what was his name? Richard Armstrong, a cosmetics executive.
A cosmetics executive, whatever the hell that is.
I'm generally regarded as fairly likable, reasonably good looking. I'm a whiz at my job.
And very modest.
I'm an account executive for Marlin Cosmetics. My name is Lawrence Armstrong, and I'm known as Larry to my friends, both old and new. What's your name?
Claudia.
It's nice to meet you, Claudia.
Yes, and he's got that chest hair out, which I think is back then like a sign that you're like looking for action.
What's your sign?
Your DTF, if you have all of that chest hair poking out. And they end up kind of spending the evening together, drinking some more, dancing, drinking even more, dancing. And then before you know it, she ends up in his little Corvette back in the parking garage of his apartment complex.
You mean his little red Corvette?
Yeah. But before she makes any mistakes...
Well, she can't cheat. She can't, like, she reaches that point and she can go no further. You know, she says, I'm sorry, I think I've made a mistake, which is kind of like a classical Dodgers line, right? Like, use a guy for a couple of free drinks at the disco, and then you get to the parking garage, and it's like, oh, I think I've made a mistake. I'm not going back to your place.
Yeah,
after
she won't go upstairs. She won't even kiss him and runs off kind of feeling emotional about it, which the funniest part is he reveals he's also married too, although he could just be saying that to try to get her upstairs.
Exactly what I was like. Oh, he's just saying that to like the overcome her objection that she's married.
It's yeah,
like,
by that
I've
point,
heard that one before, buddy.
Yeah, he just wanted the panties on the floor. I think he was willing to say anything because he had probably bought her at least 8 martinis that night.
I don't think Claudia wears panties. That's what I'm getting from this character.
Well, she definitely wasn't wearing panties at the end of the episode. So she's really upset. She goes to a phone booth, and who do you think she calls for help?
Who are you going to call?
Is it Matthew Blaisdell?
Mm-mm. It's Stephen Carrington, baby.
Mm-hmm.
In the woods, they do have this friendly moment, but you do wonder, what are the boundaries of friendship? And that's what I like. I've always liked the storyline with these two because they push it to this level where, yeah, they're friends and they're sort of good for each other in some way, but then he's kind of leaning into her too much and she's kind of just going with it, and then she's ready for it. And
well, she does have a perspective that I didn't even consider, and she says the little smooch that they shared a few episodes ago, she felt it was more brotherly than romantic.
That's right.
So that was interesting and kind of makes more sense because she knows that he identifies as gay or has before.
But despite all that, she's, you know, as she already said, everybody else called him a fruit. I just say he's gay. And I think that kind of talk is disgusting. So she's, you know, boundaries don't mean much to her, at least in the parlance of, you know, 1981. And so she's like, well, whatever. We can smooch in the woods under the moonlight after you come save me from almost being date raped at the discotheque. Then it's like, well, wait a minute. So you guys definitely are taking this friendship way off the road here. Like, this is now turning into some really like great soap opera writing, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the lines are definitely blurry and it's definitely interesting. And that's not all for Claudia. She decides to confront Crystal about this affair.
Yeah, I like this scene. I guess there's art galleries in Denver, Colorado in 1981. I don't know.
Yes, darling, they did have art in Denver.
I just like that she called the Carrington Mansion and somehow got the whereabouts of Crystal, who's just, I guess, wandering the art galleries in downtown Denver, and just shows up, you know, and runs into her in front of a contemporary art piece, which I'm sure is worth nothing today.
It was actually a pretty savvy move because it was neutral ground, right? She wasn't going to the Carrington Mansion to confront Crystal, and she wasn't like calling a meeting, so Crystal wasn't really able to prepare for this moment. So I think it was awesome of Claudia to do that.
No, it's a good move on her part. But I like the setting because here we are with like aspirations again. Like, it's art, it's literature. You know, there's always these like moments where we're trying to like elevate what these characters, you know, tastes levels are. Clearly neither of them is there for the art because Crystal's just kind of wandering around in a daze. And I like that they meet each other coming around the corner in the art gallery. And Crystal says, Claudia. And Claudia says, Ms. Carrington. You know, so Claudia's like not even having that pleasantry with her.
Yeah, no, the way
no
that...
No Christian names here.
Uh-huh. The way that Claudia handled this was pitch perfect. And Crystal was clearly caught off guard. And she even tells Claudia that this is unfair, that she's coming for her when she hasn't even talked to Matthew about it, her husband.
Have you asked Matthew about this?
I'm asking you.
That's very unfair, Claudia. Matthew's your husband. I'm nothing to you.
And Blake Carrington is your husband. What is it that you want? I mean, don't you already have enough?
I don't know that Claudia's seeking resolution. I think she's trying to work on her marriage with Matthew. I don't know how much this serves that purpose, ultimately, but I think she needs to confront Crystal, and she does it. but she's got work to do at home.
I don't think she really cares about what's going on at home, because after this confrontation at the art gallery, she ends up at the Carrington cabin outside of town with Steven, who went to take a little sojourn there, as he revealed to her when he went to pick her up from her scandals excursion.
It's this weird, like, Harold and Maude moment the next morning. Like, oh my God, Steven and Claudia are in bed together naked, you know, or, I mean, assumably, because they're under bed sheets. But it's a little bit, it's a kind of an eye-opening moment, but you knew it was coming. But when you just cut to that, it's like, oh, okay. I missed the flash and fire of Claudia and Steven doing it.
Yeah, it definitely was still surprising, even though they've had these romantic moments together. But to actually consummate their relationship in the cabin, it's a bit much.
And it's a love shack.
It totally is a love shack. And they both seem to enjoy it, I guess, because she tells him that he was a gentle lover, regardless of gender.
You don't have to wonder, Stephen. There's a beautiful gentleness about you. Tenderness that transcends gender. That's something you're never gonna lose. No matter what happens after tonight.
Love that line. I think that's like such a line that's, well, I mean, obviously it's relevant more now probably than it was. That was probably a throwaway line at that time. It was probably just supposed to be an excuse for how Steven, who's supposedly probably homosexual, sleeping with Claudia, you know. But now, of course, it's like, well, everybody can be everything, and that's why I like you. You're not so defined.
I think at the time people were probably very territorial about this relationship, because here is this straight cisgendered woman having a sexual liaison with a man who identifies as gay, but really what they're embarking on is very fluid, and that's something nowadays that is much more accepted, and people are much more prone to want to have those sorts of relationships. So kudos to Dynasty and the Shapiros for being so forward-thinking back.
Well, I think
81.
It's one of those, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day, right? I think they were just throwing everything at the wall, and this one just happens to stick for today, because then you look at the thing with Blake and Crystal, no bueno. I don't want, like, marital rape going on in my soap opera, so not all of these things work out over time, but this one certainly does.
Yeah, I guess the Shapiros giveth and the Shapiros taketh away. Now, if Crystal doesn't have enough problems by being violently attacked by her husband, now she's got that little mousy stepdaughters of her, Fallon, tiptoeing around trying to figure out what's going on with her. Fallon sneaks into Michael, the worst chauffeur in the history of chauffeurs' quarters, which I thought was interesting. I don't think we've ever seen the servants' quarters before.
But all I saw was there was like a sink, like a bathroom sink next to the entry door. And that just tells you all you need to know about how this guy lives.
Yeah, but all I saw was Michael taking off his silk robe and showing off that body adi adi and those silk boxers.
Those terrible, like, silk boxer shorts, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't see the chemistry here again. I have to recuse myself. Because
I actually, in that scene, I saw it. They were being very playful.
Oh, that's because he was well lit. I think all of the bad things about him seem to disappear in dark lighting.
Oh, maybe it's because I'm well lit, because I'm halfway through this martini that you served up. But the two of them are being very sexually playful with each other, and he's ready to drop the hot gossip, honey, on Crystal.
Well, no, he's basically a broker's agent for, you know, negative information all around the Carrington house, whether it's Blake coming to him, whether it's Fallon coming to him. And so he thinks he's in this like power position because he's like triangulating all these people with all this information that he has and extortion and blackmail possibilities, I guess, you know, but I don't like the character. So I recuse myself, as I said.
Well, it works for Fallon because she lets him smooch on her. She presses him.
You know what? This I find so unbelievable because she is clearly a five-dimensional chess player. And why she is messing around with this two-bit
limo
driver.
Well, in this instance, it's because he has some tea to spill on her stepmother.
I still think she's still above
that. Who she has an adversarial relationship with.
I think that's three dimensions, but her fifth dimension is... But I also don't have to sleep with a guy to get that information. But, okay.
Well, she's a woman, and she uses that prowess, as we've seen a few times now, to make her way in the world, as unfortunate as that is in a feminist environment. But it works because he reveals that he found out from the British Babe secretary of Cecil Colby that Crystal pawned off her...
She hocked her jewels.
Necklace, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which we didn't know that Michael knew or anybody knew, but I guess everybody in Denver just has loose lips.
Here's, some more of that sloppy writing, but that's fine, you know. It's sort of assumed at this point. So we'll give it a pass.
So after she's done banging the help, she sneakily asks Crystal if she can borrow that necklace for a evening event. And Crystal's
It wasn't really suspenseful. They weren't getting the level of suspense that they wanted out of this. I mean, Hitchcock did not direct this scene, but it was fun to listen to Fallon retell the story of shopping for the jewels before the wedding with Blake, with
her
father.
Yeah, and Crystal totally calls her out. And is like, you were in Reno.
Bitch, you were in Reno.
Which I just love the idea of Fallon being in Reno.
I was just thinking, what the hell is going on in Reno that Fallon would ever be there?
I don't know. Maybe the football team was playing there. And it doesn't really matter because later Crystal pulls a Ocean's 8 and has a fake made to give to Fallon.
I mean, maybe that's Ocean's 235. I don't know. It's
How many Ocean's movies have you actually seen?
Like zero of them.
Yeah, you've seen Ocean's 0. So leave those pop culture references to me.
My point being, it's very common for women of a certain means to have their jewelry copied. It's what's called paste.
I did learn that from the Real Housewives of Orange County, actually. Alexis
from
Bellino.
Of all the people to learn that, like, oh, come on. But okay. But yes, Crystal, she's been around the block at this point. So, you know, her friend Doris earlier, like, even told her about, like, you can get fakes made. And that's what she's passing off here to Fallon. And, you know, so far the frame is holding.
But yeah, seems to have worked, yeah. But we didn't really dive too deep into that in this episode.
Is there something you want to have out with me, Fallon? Crystal, what a melodramatic question. Have what out? If it's that sweet talk I overheard between you and Matthew, I mean, it was a party. We all of us say things at parties. I mean, if I had been quoted after two sips of champagne... Really, have what out?
It seems like Fallon bought it, and Crystal literally burns the evidence. She takes the receipt for the fake and lights it on fire, which seems like a hazard to do in the Carrington mansion.
Well, I just thought that it was another one of these dramatic things that somebody does
on a soap opera.
So, or maybe Crystal's a witch. I don't know. Maybe all this time there's like something else to all this. And like she's like burning the effigy.
It didn't seem like it was a controlled flame. Not sure that was up to code. We'd have to ask the Denver FD.
Here's the thing. This necklace, it looks like something from Service Merchandise. Like it's not anything super hot to me. It's just a old Gucci curb link chain with some like, I don't know, baguette cut emeralds or something. I don't even know, but it's not particularly sexy. But I guess it doesn't have to be sexy. If it's just gold and emeralds, maybe that's all it takes to be worth something.
I mean, it looks nice to me. It ain't the crown jewels, but it ain't like a special from Zales either.
Zales. You got me. Here's the thing. The episode's fucking called The Necklace.
So you want a hot piece of jewels.
Yes, I want hot jewels. But all I really kind of got was like some cold trinkets. And also, there was no necklace action. I think we had some Fallon trying to stir the pot and uncover the truth with her. And that was about 3 minutes of necklace talk. And that was it. So I don't know why this episode was called The Necklace. I think they kind of were already worn out after the previous episodes, mythological and folkloric exegesis. So maybe they just should have not titled it The Necklace if they didn't have this energy.
Good point. Well, my favorite scene of the episode is back at the Hillside, which is really becoming my favorite
bar. This is our place.
I know that you are more of a Scandals girl and I'm more of a Hillside.
Excuse me.
Bitch.
I'm a Scandals dude, guy, whatever, but do not call me that. That is not how I identify.
Well, I love the Hillside. I'm glad we're back at the best bar near an oil derrick in Denver. And their revelry was like on fire in fuego.
Well, again, this is just the hoi polloi, the unwashed masses. They know how to party.
What
and rich
was
people
that
like the Carringtons
that Walter Lankershim and Matthew Blaisdell were
like,
doing?
It was like some like a jig,
some
or
sort
something.
Of folkloric jig
was,
where they were
it was
hand
like
in
Scottish
hand
Highlands
river dance to the extreme, and I don't know what
with a Michelob Light or something.
Yeah, Natty Ice for show.
No, that wasn't around then yet.
Oh, it wasn't?
No. Maybe it was Coors?
We might need to fact check that.
Strohs?
It was totally Riverdance and super cute.
Then they start shitting on each other and having all these toasts. You know, like, oh, Walter's this great old man who taught me everything. And, oh, Matthew's is this prodigal son who's going to take us into the future with oil. And it's celebratory at least. I don't know how
I was vibing with it, but because after we had marital rape, we have another ugly cry from Lindsay. We have an awkward sex scene with Fallon and the chauffeur. I needed a little bit of levity. I needed that light. So when they started dancing like they were little leprechauns and they were giving each other toasts and they were just broing out, I was like, finally, this is like what I need. And they deserved it. They've been working their asses off this whole time. Finally, this stupid oil derrick starts spurting the black gold, which I didn't know that it ever would. And I actually felt some joy when I saw it gush
honestly, it is
all
kind
over
of,
their
it's,
faces.
It's a bit of an emotional payoff to sit through 7 or 8, however many. Oh, my God. I don't know how many episodes they sat through at this point. And finally, there's like a result, like an actual physical result of all the work that has been going on in the subplot at the oil derrick, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you got to see that oil gush every episode of the Beverly Hillbillies.
My eyes almost gushed. It was kind of an emotional payoff.
I gushed in my pants a little bit.
I felt misty. Well, I didn't feel sticky, but I felt misty.
But no, I'm really happy for them, and I'm really curious to see how this changes the dynamic of the show. Are they just going to be rich, bitch?
I guess we have to watch another episode to find out.
And we're back. My look of the week, for the first time, might be something that I just want to wear myself. And
Meaning,
put it over my head and go out to Scandals or to the Hillside, like wherever I want. But it's really just kind of one item of clothing. I guess it is part of a whole ensemble. The item of clothing I want to wear is Claudia Blaisdell's super duper fuzzy sweater that has this like graphic treatment on the front of it.
That like totally mimics the Dynasty oil spurt graphic from the title credits.
I know. How fucking meta is that?
I mean, I think maybe they just found that sweater somewhere and they're like, you have to wear this in the next episode. It's you know, or maybe that's like she's wearing her husband's sports team, you know, but like her husband owns the oil company, so she's wearing his oil logo on her shirt. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know if this thing is made of Angora or what, but it has shape and form.
It's got universal powers for sure.
Well, it kind of reminds me of her her superhero outfit. There is something sort of uniform about it, but
it's definitely something Crystal would not wear. Crystal doesn't wear a graphic.
No graphics.
She doesn't wear statement.
And nothing fuzzy unless it's a fur.
Oh, no, she
honey.
Likes her fuzzy sweaters, but not like this.
Yeah, definitely not those colors because they're sort of like a pastel Easter situation.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's like a really bad Easter nightmare. But I wouldn't want to wake up from this. It's kind of fun to watch.
Gobble, so, gobble. Which, I want which, some. Which. Oh, wait, bunnies don't say gobble, gobble, do they?
So
what did you put in these martinis?
My look of the week is kind of, look, there's no great looks in this episode, so I have just like a couple of runners up to what I don't know, because again, no great looks. So I really liked Fallon's. She's wearing this classic look where it's the high-waisted dark denim slim jean with a drapey sleeveless, I guess you call it a blouse, but it's like a button-up top and like a rayon, or, well, they're the Carringtons. It's probably silk. So it's like in a sort of a burgundy color. This is like a, you could just wear this today. A lot of women have like bought this look off the rack like for the last 10 years. It's probably kind of winding down by now, but you know, this is a very contemporary right now look that she's got on, and it's not like a great outfit, but it holds up today. So there's something to be said for that. The other thing that I liked from this episode was Stephen Carrington's, we're on runners up because there's no great looks. Stephen Carrington has got this really nice bomber jacket on. I don't love the color, but it's cut just right, a little bit high on the waist, as is appropriate for the time. And I have one just like it that is, I think, also from that time period. It's in a gray leather. And, you know, I don't wear it because I don't think it, like, fits me the right way. And it looks too 1981. And you can't even really do that in a vintage way right now. But I think it looks good on him. And it's in that moonlight scene with Claudia. So it's also, you know, it's fun that he's wearing something that's kind of new and interesting in that moment.
Can I just say I'm completely shocked that neither one of us chose the outfit that Claudia wore to Scandals.
That was too easy. And Claudia, frankly, was too easy here.
Hey-o.
I do like, you know, she's doing this like crimpy perm.
Oh, yeah. She was going out and she was DTF.
Because she was DTF. Yeah.
She must have spent 2 hours getting that crimp going on in her hair. And
well,
she's wearing
on the lip gloss.
She's got a lip gloss and she's got a very heavy blush. Very heavy.
Yeah, it's... she could dial it back, but it's, again, it's that time, and she's, I don't know, it's purpley and it's black and it's got some sharp shoulders on it. Again, we're seeing the evolution of shoulder pads happening. It's scandalous for sure. It's not a great look.
But yeah, I can't believe we chose it, but I guess we just talked about it, so maybe we did kind of choose it.
Secret look of the week.
Undercover look of the week. From the undercover hoe.
Well, her therapist did call her a hooker in this.
Well, I know, which is just so unprofessional.
No, I'm sorry. I think she called herself a hooker to her. I don't know. She thought the therapist thought she was a hooker. Something like that. Whatever.
Haven't we all had that moment where we're like...
We thought our therapist thought we were calling ourselves a hooker?
Yeah.
All right, well... Anyway, this martini's been delicious.
Yeah, we're wasted. Well, Kyler, I want to I actually just want you to wrap the episode up because I am a little too inebriated to finish.
You drank half that drink. It's not that crazy, but all right. So I guess we have to give thanks to the above
God,
DJ like Jugo, God, for our wondrous theme song, and Lindsay Mound for our iconographic images.
Yeah, Jugo and Lindsay.
That's right. And you can reach us on all of our podcast and social media type places. And that's nastypodcast.com, N-A-S-T-Y podcast.com.
Wait, there ain't no D in it?
I said nasty podcast.
How do you spell that?
N-A-S-T-Y.
Podcast?
Uh-huh. .com.
Okay, if you made it to the end of this episode, you are a saint, a sweetheart, a slice of apple pie, and we love you. We'll see you next week.
Ciao.